The Fan on Demand. Cooler than Math Club and almost as cool as Chess Club. The Fan Club. Log on to Sportsnet590.ca. You just got called up to the big league, son. Welcome to the show. This is Primetime Sports with Bob McCallum on the Sportsnet Radio Network.
It's Tuesday, September 2nd, 2014, Primetime Sports on your radio, on your television, on the Sportsnet family of networks. Regular chair, regular co-host, Bob McCown and Stephen Brunt.
Summer must be over.
Yeah, for you.
Well, you were here. You weren't here a lot this summer. You were off a lot.
I was here the usual amount. You, at least I was here some of the time. You weren't here at all. Well, people bitch and complain about the amount of vacation time I get.
That's true. They do.
You, on the other hand.
I was still beavering away out there, though.
No.
Writing and doing all those other things I do.
You were doing nothing. You weren't here.
I wasn't here. You're right.
I mean, I was on last week with the Lewicki stuff.
Did you drop by?
I was on the phone the same as you.
I was on the phone, yes.
Like, I did interviews.
Mm-hmm.
I was on City TV, and I was on The Fan, and, you know, various other people call me. So I do other things,
like,
too.
Like a violation of your contract.
Not really.
Really?
Invoices have been printed and will be going out.
Just an add-on.
I don't think they know that they're getting invoiced for this, but you wouldn't think I would do this for free, would you?
You know, I got to say, I did give you credit when the Lewicki thing happened. I was on a bunch of things, and I did say, well, you know, Bob said.
Back in March
that this was going to happen. And, you know, I know not everything you've always said has always come true, but this
pretty much.
But this did.
Pretty much.
No, this was a good one, though. You were bang on with this one.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I know I give you credit about seven different cities in Canada.
Well, thank you very much. Although I take no great pride in that.
Oh, you take great pride. You should take great pride in it.
Well, no. But, I mean, it was clear that this was not turning out to be what Tim had hoped it would be, I suppose.
Yes.
From a variety of perspectives.
I assume we'll learn more about that as time passes.
Well, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see whether, you know, Lewicki is, you know, he's not shy. One thing we know. You know, he's never looked in the mirror and been disappointed in what he sees. So will he come out at some point and tell us exactly what the reasons are for this premature departure? I mean, I believe it's twofold. I believe it's... or was twofold. And I don't know which is more important, but it was a horrible winter. He hated it, and his wife hated it more. And I don't think there's anything untoward about that. I think it's perfectly understandable. A couple of Southern California people come to Toronto in the worst winter week I can remember, since probably I was a kid. I wouldn't be happy either.
No.
I wasn't happy.
No.
And then secondly, how much of it had to do with the board and the cat fight between Bell and Rogers, which nobody seems to want to confirm or talk about, but everybody opines about.
Yes.
And we hear little snippets here or there about, you know, things aren't exactly, well, big surprise, right? So, you know, which of those two was the bigger factor? Maybe at some point we'll find out. But clearly they were. Wonder how surprised this guy was, our next guest.
That's
was.
That's a very good question, Bob. Why don't
perhaps
we ask him?
Perhaps we'll ask him. Here is the president of basketball operations and managing general of the Toronto Raptors, back from his, I think, annual trip to Africa. Masai Ujiri is with us. Do you go to Africa every year?
Yes, sir.
Yep.
Every summer. What's going on, Bob?
Glad to have you back.
How are you guys?
Hope you had a good summer.
Very good. Very good.
So I assume you weren't back. You were still off the continent when you hear the big boss, the guy who brought you here, is heading in another direction. How much of a surprise was it?
you know, I'm pretty close to Tim, you know, like, so I kind of knew, you know, kind of what was going on. Since July, I kind of knew that, you know, he's always wanted to go on to start his own business. So I'm close to him. So I knew that was in the that was something that could be a possibility. So yeah, we mope and we're disappointed, you know, like because the one thing, Bob, I said it on your show, is we underrate chemistry. We had good chemistry here, you know, like, but
right.
At the same time, to me, it's you know what, he'll be here for the next year. We have to carry on, you know, like, we have to keep this thing moving. We can't sit and cry and bitch about anything. We've got to move on, you know, like, the Bobs are going to come and go. The Masais, the Tim Leiweekes, the Kyle Lowrys, they're going to come and go. The Toronto Raptors will always be here. They will always be here. You know, ownership changes, leaders change, players change. The team is always going to be here, and we have to stand up for that, and we have to go out there and compete, and that's the way I see it. I have to go out there and do my job, and I've learned so much from him, and hope to keep on moving.
That's all of that said, Masai. Did the timing of Tim's departure surprise you, and did it disappoint you?
Yeah, it's a little disappointing, you know, like, because of, you know, the sometimes the movement, you know, like where we are now, you know, like you got good momentum, but I think we have the momentum to keep going. He's here for a year, another year, and we'll keep on moving with it. But yes, sometimes with the timing of these things, I'm not down into the details of everything, you know, even though he's a personal friend too, you know, but for me is disappointed for a couple of days, disappointed while losing a good boss and a good leader, but you know, I lead a certain part of it too, and I have to keep it moving, you know, and keep going.
Not to disagree with you, but I'll bet you a cup of coffee he doesn't make it the year.
Hey, you know, like I think we were absolutely lucky to have him for a year. It changed the, I think the movement here, it made us dare ourselves a little bit in this market, and you know, like we need to keep standing up for ourselves, you know, and it's an example that, you know what, I want to win. We want to win here, you know, and we want to grow as a team. We don't want to be just one of those NBA teams that NBA team that's outside Canada. We want to make an impression. We want to grow, and that's for me. That's what we're going to do.
There are bars with each individual players and each individual player in any sport. And sometimes they're sort of intangible and they're not expected. And when guys get to achieve certain things, it leads you to open your eyes and say, well, I wonder if the ceiling is even significantly higher than we even thought it was. And that brings me to DeMar DeRozan, who has had this steady growth, improvement, evolution into the number one player on your club. And yet, I don't know how many Raptor fans would have looked at DeMar as among the elite players in the truly elite players in the league. Maybe some, maybe blindly because they're Raptor fans. But his ability to make the final roster of Team USA is, I think, one of those bars that maybe caught a lot of us by surprise. Knowing DeMar as you do, what do you think that might mean in terms of his continued development?
Well, I said to DeMar, in one year all-star, in one year you made the playoffs for the first time in your career. And you played very well. Apart from that game one, I think DeMar, we can all say, played really well in that playoff series, was a factor.
Mm-hmm.
Makes the USA team. I asked him, so what's next? You know, like in one sentence, Bob, we have to win. We have to win big in Toronto. We have to win in the playoffs. That's what he said, you know, like, and that tells you he's thinking about the next thing, you know, like he's not, if me and you were talking this time last year, I don't think we all claim to be geniuses, but did I see him being an all-star? Even if we say, okay, a couple players didn't play, I honestly didn't see it.
That would have been a stretch. Yeah.
Yes. I think it would have been a stretch. If we said, okay, that team was going to make the playoffs, and DeMar would play that way in the playoffs. A little bit of a stretch, too. I would say.
Fair.
Too. You know, like making the USA team a little bit of a stretch. I think, you know, like he's one of those guys, Bob, that honestly every day he's in the gym, he goes and he works at it and he works at it, and his focus and its purpose and it's an honest direction. That guy, he's the height of what a professional athlete should be, because if you want to say the overall talent, it might not be the top highest, you know, like, but whatever DeMar's talent is, he works even harder, you know, like to get to a point where he competes really well, and I'm extremely proud of that kid.
What's the kind of risk reward equation in terms of your guys playing internationally? You know, a guy gets a chance to play for his country. You know, there's obviously a potential fatigue factor as the season goes, getting into the season. There's an injury risk, but it's a chance for a player to grow it in a lot of cases. How do you kind of calculate that?
You know what? For me, if and I talked to DeMar about this, talked to Jonas, I talked to all these guys. You make a decision, you know, like wearing that. That jersey for your country. For me, I played for Nigeria, and it's something so great, you know, like you get it's so much pride when you're actually doing it. Honestly, we are the ones that just make all these, you know, assessments and comments and try to figure it out for them. But when you are in the moment, they don't think about it. Are there fatigue factors? Yes, you know, like they are. You're playing all year round. You saw a couple players pull out of it, but I think it depends on what player you are, you know, like, and you can make measurements of when do I play, when have I played, and but this opportunity was unique for DeMar DeRozan, you know, like, I don't think this opportunity is unique for Jonas, because you can go in, be a focus, and guys that continue to play get better, you know, like at a younger age, you know, like you can continue to get better, and the fatigue factor is not as much. Older players, yes, but I think younger players, you know, like they can figure it out.
Is there any chance of a significant roster move before you start camp?
Right now, at the top of my head, I would say no, but we're all crazy individuals in this business.
Yeah, you know? Never,
like,
know.
Yes. So I'm as crazy as the 29 other GMs, and you know, you never know what can come up, what situations come up. So I never say never, Bob, you know, like, because we're always looking to get better, you know, like, but sometimes it's doing nothing, you know, like, and we figured going into training camp, you know, like we signed the guys that we wanted to sign back, you know, like,
yep.
Are we where we should be, you know, like, maybe not, but, you know, like, we'll take the training camp roster and go in and fight.
I guess before we let you go here, Masai, tell us about your trip. I know you were in Africa, Basketball Without Borders, which you're in pretty deeply involved. The continent, parts of the continent, are facing yet another terrible challenge right now with the Ebola outbreak. It's another tough time. Your impressions. I'm not sure entirely where you were in Africa, but could you tell us about the trip?
Unbelievable trip, guys. It's for me. The August is always dedicated to the work over there, doing the camps, one with the NBA, which I've done, being director for 12 years. It's a huge pride for me to go back, take NBA players and get all these kids in Africa and teach them the basic fundamentals of basketball, and also coach the coaches over there. But also to take my foundation and my camps that I modeled after Basketball Without Borders and some of the things we're trying to do in growing in the camps over there. And this year when in Nairobi, and we were in Mombasa and in Kayole, one of the biggest slums in Kenya, where you see kids that don't have the opportunity. What an unbelievable, I think, opportunity for me to go in there and give back, whether it's gear, whether it's teaching, and whether it's even like selling opportunity. I grew up in Africa, and I grew up like some of these kids, so I feel a lot of pressure there, where I feel that I need to help more over there, and I'll continue to do it as long as I can.
I know Steven said final point, but you should never trust him. I have another one.
This is the other final point.
Yeah. So the other piece of news during this off season is, or the plans for a new practice facility, and a lot has been talked about what this actually means, and you know, you'll forgive me, but you understand that any time any organization has a significant expenditure with a new thing, they want you to believe that it's the best thing ever and this is what it's going to mean and blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. And I kind of take it all with a grain of salt. In this case, I'm intrigued by this. And I have a number of questions on this. I mean, first of all, would you categorize your existing practice facility as being substandard?
Not substandard, but sometimes inconvenient, you know, like... Bob, we got guys, DeMar DeRozan, that loves to shoot every single night. I know the night before we played, I can't remember if it was game 7. I don't know what there was some event here in that night where it was inconvenient for him to just, you're going through a concourse with people and it almost makes you not want to go, you know, like the way it's situated.
I understand.
In the gym. So those are the kind of things, you know, like the disconnection between front office, coaches, players. We all want to be in the same place because we all belong to one organization, and we have one purpose, which is winning and building and growing. So this disconnect coming upstairs to the front office, I don't really believe in that. You know, like I think being all in one place, it enhances chemistry, in my opinion.
Part two.
Yes.
I'm guessing you have been in all or virtually all of the practice facilities with the other clubs in the NBA.
Yes.
So you've seen them. You have a pretty good idea.
Yep.
You know, some, I'm sure, are much better than others. Part of the equation here has been, the selling tool has been, with this new facility, we will have a better chance of luring high-profile players, particularly free agents, to Toronto. That's part of the selling point. Will this facility, in your opinion, based on what you know, be at the top of the food chain, better than anybody else's, sufficiently elite that it becomes a real selling tool for you?
Well, we've visited all the other ones, and it's going to be, I would say, it will be one of the top ones in the NBA for sure. Will it help, Bob? There's so many things that are coming to. They're coming to into play in those kind of situations. But you know what? I think we have a solid organization. We have, I think, now the momentum of the fans, the fan movement. We have to do a good job putting the brand on the floor. This is another, I think, very significant part. But it's only a part of it. It's like when people talk about analytics, or they talk about the different aspects of making you figure out a player. And this is part of the equation. And we're happy that, you know, we're really ecstatic to ownership, to the city, to Tim and his hard work, because it was one of the first things I discussed when I interviewed with Tim is this is a priority for me. To take it to another level, but it is part of what we need in terms of taking it to that next level.
We're glad to have you back. It's a little while yet till camp begins, and the season starts in 2 months from now, give or take. We'll look forward to having the opportunity to chat between now and then as we get closer to the start of the regular season, and we always enjoy it. Thank you, Masai.
Thanks, guys. Thanks for having me, and I hope to see you guys soon.
Yeah, we'll see you soon. Masai Ujiri, the president of basketball and general manager of the Toronto Raptors. Where are you on this new facility?
Well, it does sound, you know, I think it's about, yeah, you wouldn't think that professional athletes would say, boy, I'm going to decide to go to this team because they have a great practice facility. That's not, you know, that a free, but, you know, part of what they seem to have been doing here is to suggest that this is a very attractive place to play.
Sure.
That's, you know, this team hasn't had a history of winning championships. It doesn't have that kind of lore and legacy. It's not a, you know, kind of a prestige franchise in the NBA historically. So, but they've been trying to do, you know, the Drake thing is part of that as well. But I think that they've been trying to create, and I think this is something that happened after Lewicki arrived, to create the sense that this could be a destination. That if you're Kevin Durant, you know, this would be an okay place to come if you had the option.
See, the only thing concern I have, and I haven't seen it, I haven't seen the plans for it. To the best of my knowledge, I've never been in another NBA training facility, so I have no point of comparison. If I'm going to go down the road of an expenditure of this size, which I hear is $30 million,
mm-hmm.
I want to build, at least the day it opens, I want to build a facility that blows everybody, that is the best. Some, I don't know how it's the best.
Yeah.
I don't know what would make it the best, but I want to be able to say, nobody's got what we've got. Like, that to me is a selling point.
I guess, yeah.
And what Masai said was, you know, it'll be among the top. I wonder if that's good enough. You know, when you remember when Skydome opened?
Yes.
Architects from all over the world, people from all over the world coming here just to look at this notion of a concrete roof, a concrete stadium with a convertible roof.
Yes.
Now,
none of them built one like that again.
No. I mean, but for a period of time, Yes. It was the eighth wonder of the world.
It was for about a year. Yep.
Right. Eventually, things change. People build better. You're going to, you know.
There's an evolution, yeah.
But why build something that in year one isn't the absolute creme de la creme, Taj Mahal? That, to me, is a selling point. I'm a little bit concerned that we're not hearing that. Mr. Ryan with us? Oh. Here's our friend Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe who joins us. Have you been eavesdropping on our little discussion here?
I have. I'm thinking my mind is moving in many, many directions on the subject of training facilities. And all these things, whether they're private jets or whether they are masseur for everybody,
yeah,
or whatever it is, it makes me laugh to think that in the days gone by, some pretty good basketball teams managed to play the game without all the amenities, but I know it's 2014.
I see.
And it is important. I mean, I think the big advance in this thinking in the modern NBA was with Dallas, when Mark Cuban took over,
right,
and
mm-hmm.
a new building was built. And I remember covering NCAA tournament games there, and the kids, everybody wanted to get into the Dallas locker room because they had Xbox, you know, they had PlayStation. They had all kinds of stuff. Every locker was equipped into that. You know, so it's always something. You know, there's always some trying to keep up with the Joneses. And whatever the Raptors would do, somebody else would try to outdo them eventually.
Of course.
I seem to remember going to watch the Larry Bird, Bill Walton era Boston Celtics practicing at a kind of a college gym somewhere, right?
Yeah, well, college. No. Even better. The Larry Bird, Bill Walton team practiced at Hellenic College, which was a Greek Orthodox seminary. And the gym was a very modest gym with no seating. Except on one side, there were bleachers on one side and a stage on the other side. It was as modest as you could be.
Mm-hmm.
And that, I argue, is the best team that ever played basketball in the history of the planet Earth, and they played in that facility. But these things are a given, though. We understand that's just that's the reality of it. But you're so correct. The Celtics played in a modest little facility, and they played basketball as well as has ever been played ever.
It's hard to understand whether a $30 million investment in a practice facility is going to make any difference in whether Kevin Durant decides to come and play for the Toronto Raptors, a team he apparently grew up being a fan of for almost inexplicable reasons. But he was a Raptor fan growing up.
Well, good for him.
Or, yeah, exactly. Or, does that matter? I mean, where is it on that pecking order? Is there any chance that it saves you $500,000 in cost? Well, we'll offer you $500,000 less than those guys, but we look at the gym we got. I mean, I don't think that conversation is likely to ever happen, Ryan, is it?
It's hard for me to think that could ever be the determining factor. It would be something in the middle. Well, you know, it's nice. They got a nice facility, comma. And as you move on to the next thing, impossible for that to be the determining factor for anybody, particularly a guy at that caliber of play. I mean, you expect certain amenities, but anymore, yes, true. But my God, no, that can't be. But, you know, you want to have something presentable and respectable, sure, in the modern context. The Clippers, for years, were vagabonds. They barely knew where they were practicing day to day. And I'm not being facetious. And now they went and built a facility that is good and permanent and quite nice. The Celtics got themselves a deal with a healthcare place and to get a slice of the facility and have a gym all to themselves and have their facility. And it's perfectly acceptable. But I'm sure there are 15 more glamorous ones in the league. I'm positive. Like they have to be.
Yeah. Well, I mean, even I remember in terms of college, UNLV, when Tarkanian was winning championships, their practice facility was in a health club.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's a basketball court and a health club.
I remember, one of the first teams, believe it or not, that built a separate practice facility, and it was actually at their facility, but they had a separate one that was, and ooh, people were, wow, how about this? The Cleveland Cavaliers, when they were in the Richfield Coliseum.
Really, huh?
Built a practice gym adjacent to it. And that was new because in those days, most teams scrounged around trying to find places to practice because nobody in the NBA, including the Knicks, had a practice facility that they could rely on. In those days, the Lakers, anybody, no matter how wealthy a team was, it was a lot of teams were really, really scrounging for places. The Cavaliers built their own. They didn't have to go, schlepping out somewhere else. They went to the same place so they would play their game. And now the Pacers have a practice facility right adjacent to whatever they're calling that building these days. I keep forgetting. But they have one right there adjacent, attached to their own facility. But believe me, when I started covering the league and right up through the 80s with those great teams, the Celtics and Lakers and Pistons et al., a lot of them were schlepping around at very modest places. Practice. Well, yes, you have ambient noise, as we say in the background here.
Yeah. So the obvious follow-up question is, cite the names of the free agents the Cavaliers were able to sign in Richfield.
Yeah.
Because
the answer would be Zed. No, absolutely nothing.
Yeah, Zed.
It wasn't a factor, no.
We got here. I got to ask you about. We're on the eve of National Football League season, and the Patriots are doing Patriot things, the Patriot way. Logan Mankins gets shipped out, Pro Bowl offensive lineman. Ryan Mallett gets shipped out, so they are now within a Tom Brady knee injury of handing the reins and handing the season over to Jimmy Garoppolo, a guy they like and a guy they drafted, but a raw mm-hmm. rookie. Are they going to get away with it one more time? They always seem, they do seem to be able to move salary and move veterans and restock and reload every year. Are they going to
We're all anxious to watch what happens on opening day and in the near future when someone blows by the new left guard and Brady is and the pile unfolds and Brady doesn't get up.
Yeah.
If that happens, then we can give the I told you so people can start shortling. It is a calculated risk that Belichick is taking. It's not one thing that resulted in Logan Mankins being let go. It was everything. It was an impending major salary cap hit next year. It was a detectable slippage in play last year, particularly in pass blocking. So he went from being all pro, very good, to pretty good, maybe. I mean, if you believe some people. It was their anger. They hold, I'm afraid they, let's get specific, not above holding a little grudge. Logan Mankins called them out at one time. He held out for a number of games a bunch of years ago, and he was outspoken about the way he felt that they did their business. And Bill doesn't forget these things. He didn't forget Wes Welker's little fun stuff with Rex Ryan and a few other things that Wes Welker did and said. He didn't forget that either. He has this little petty streak in him, frankly. And so I think that wasn't the only reason that Mankins was let go. Well, obviously they feel they have somebody that can do the job, and we will see if they're correct.
With Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe, Tom Brady has indicated a desire to keep playing football for some extended period of time. Peyton Manning is playing into, he's pushing 40 now.
Mm-hmm.
And you could make the argument that, well, at one point while he was at Indianapolis, injuries and other things sort of suggested that maybe his time was coming to an end. And he has demonstrated in Denver that, no, we're not quite at that point, certainly. And, I mean, at what point do you start looking at the skill set of Brady and thinking, you know, he's not what he once was? Or are we there?
This is a hot topic of conversation here.
Is
last
it?
Year, his numbers were, in many categories, the lowest since, fill in the blank, in one case since in 10 years. 60%. He's never thrown under 60% completion. Now, we can argue about statistics, lies, damn lies, and statistics.
Yeah.
And I certainly think that that comes into play here, that theory. I think the eye test is that he missed throws last year at times, particularly in the beginning of the season, where that I think you could pin it on him and not this miscommunication with the new receivers he had. As the year went on, the communication seemed to be better, and he threw better, and he played better. I don't think he's lost a whole lot. Is he the Tom Brady of 1-3 championships? No. He's 37 as of August 3rd. But is he still a high-level quarterback that can win you a Super Bowl? Absolutely. There's no question that you can win a Super Bowl with Tom Brady if you give him the right surrounding cast. Do you think last year if he had Manning's receivers, he wouldn't have thrown at least 40 to 44, five touchdowns? He would have. Manning threw 55. Brady was throwing something markedly inferior. He's still very good. But is he the same? No. Albert Pujols isn't the same. We can go down.
No, I get that. But there is a point.
The point is, you can damn well think you can win with him with the right circumstances. He's not going to be the reason you're not going to win. Make the Super Bowl. Let's put it that way.
Okay, but with the other 31 or however many other teams there are in the National Football League, you know, that we're not even having this conversation. But this is the New England Patriots, who have never had a used car fall apart in their driveway.
Oh, okay. All right. Well,
they trade them in while they're still good, you know?
I'm happy to go there because, once again, we are because of it, Belichick, and you are 100% correct. This is something that's become an interesting little discussion. I addressed this a little bit last Sunday in my Sunday column, which is to say, do not think for one second that there will be an exception made for Tom Brady. If Bill Belichick feels within the next 2 years, well, we won't be this year. There won't be a need this year. But within the next 2 years, that Brady is no longer cost efficient, is no longer a guarantee that he feels that he can get the job done with the next man up, who is Garoppolo right now, then he will absolutely not hesitate. And he loves Tom Brady personally as much as any player he's ever coached. There is no question. He owes a lot of his wealth and fame to having Tom Brady as his quarterback, and he knows it. But he still runs this team. Seven words you have to remember: in the best interest of the team. That's his mantra, and he means it. He may be right, he may be wrong, but that's what he believes. And Brady will be not. There will be no exception. He'll save all his sentiment for Tom when he ushers him into Canton down the road. But meanwhile, if Tom will be as expendable as Lawyer Malloy was, as Richard Seymour was, and as Logan Mankins was, don't think for one second that won't be the case.
But Bob, for all of that, and for all of the Patriots' way, and all of their consistent success, wouldn't it make sense to load up and give him the tools late in his career once, rather than say, hey, we got a whole bunch of other guys, you know, no-name guys at receiver, and, you know, I understand, look, Gronkowski's injury, Hernandez ending up in jail, no one knew those things were going to happen, but it's almost like every year they say, let's give you a little bit less and see what you can do.
They did in 2007, as you know, when they went 16-0,
yes,
and within one, couldn't get the Giants off, one miracle escape by Eli, one great play by David Tyree, one more great throw to the end zone to Plexico, and they win this, and they don't win. Brady doesn't, you know. Okay, they did load up that year. Since then, no, you're right. They have not gone that route, and Brady's now 37. I think picking up Darrell Revis, you know, is partially an answer. Picking up Browner, who can't play until the fifth game due to his violation of the league substance abuse policy. Brandon Browner, who's a physical player, mm-hmm, a good corner, a better upgrade. They're going to have a much better secondary on paper right now than they had last year. To that degree, they have done that. But in terms of giving him specific offensive weapons, no, they have not made any marquee. Now, after one game and 43 reps in one exhibition game, people here are all excited about the guy they got from Houston, Tim Wright. He played 43 snaps last week in his first game, caught some passes, looked athletic. Now suddenly there's a school of thought that says, he might really help. This guy could really. Okay, fine. We'll see about that. But he hardly qualifies as a marquee addition to the Brady's offense. So the additions to help Brady were the defense. That might not be. That might be the way to go. Like, quite frankly, the reason that they have not won any championships since 2005 is that they have not had that kind of a defense to get the team off the field when they had to get them off the field,
right.
And not just in the two Super Bowls, but in other playoff games as well.
Couple of minutes. I'm intrigued by your thoughts on Michael Sam cut by the St. Louis Rams.
I think that the Tony Dungy supposition that was shot down and poo-pooed is my feeling is that that he was correct. Teams just don't need it. They don't want to risk it. Whatever they feel, it being some kind of attention, some kind of scrutiny, some kind of some kind of issues, they don't want to. If he were only a little bit better, that there would be no doubt that he's deserved. I think he belongs in the league based on the preseason performance. Cannot tell me that there isn't a spot somewhere with all those 30 teams and six or seven defensive linemen a team. There isn't a job for him somewhere. I really think that I'm choosing to believe that there are just too many coaches that just don't feel they need this, whatever they feel this is, this kind of quote-unquote distraction. It's unfair to them. I think he's proved he can play in this league. I don't know if he's going to get another chance.
I'll buy all that. You don't think, though, that there's something to the notion, and we talked about this before he was even drafted. The concern was, okay, here's a co-SEC player of the year, but he's undersized as a defensive lineman.
They had a good preseason.
Oh, I know, and he had, but I don't know. They play these games, and he just did pretty well. I don't know. I wish he were better. Let me just jump ahead. Collins. The fact of the matter is that the two guys who have done this, who have come out and had this public affirmation that they are indeed gay and they're professional athletes at the highest level, are marginal players, and it's easy to find not to find a place for them. We know there are multiple gay athletes of stature out there. We just know it. You know it.
Has
I know
to
it.
Be.
We all know it.
Has to be true.
And I'm dying for one of them to step, to be the brave guy. But nobody has done it. The same thing. He did everything right. I think. I know he's a tweener. I know that. And I'm not trying to be overly humble. I am not sophisticated enough in my understanding of the NFL to understand why he is not deemed automatically an insufficient special teams player.
Well, that's a good point, yeah.
I don't know what makes why he can't be one of those 11 guys running down the field in that kamikaze thing and tackle somebody or be on the extra point team. I don't know why he has automatically been disqualified from this. That seems to be a given. He can't play special teams. Okay, I'll take their word for it, but I don't really understand that, quite frankly.
Well, it would be interesting here. Depending on what his immediate future holds, in terms of another team picking him up, maybe a future in the Canadian Football League, he wouldn't be the first player, to be in this position and wind up going to the CFL. And if he did and had success, he wouldn't be the first player to then go back to the National Football League a year or two down the road.
Are there any rumblings? I mean, I certainly thought of that.
I haven't heard anything specific.
Yeah, Montreal has his rights.
Well, I think they'd be interested.
I mean, I'm rooting for him. I root for him. I want him to do this and be successful because I think he's a qualified professional football player, not a high-level one. But, just do the math. 53, counting the practice squads, times 30. It's hard to believe that he's not one of the best 1,500 football players in America.
Or even a practice roster guy.
Yeah.
The other thing.
I'm told the Dallas Cowboys have invited him in for to take a look.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that goes.
I'm rooting for him.
I think we all are. Okay. Robert, thank you very much. Nice to hear from you again. We'll talk to you next week.
My pleasure, as always. Talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Bob Ryan of the Boston Globe. We'll come back with more. Primetime continues on the Sportsnet radio and television networks.
Now, more of Bob McCowan and Primetime Sports on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
I have had my share of fights and some lonely
We do.
And that means, did we come up with a name for this segment? We haven't done it all summertime because we've had a bunch of riffraff in here replacing you.
Riff and raff.
Although they've all done an excellent job. I think you should be a little bit concerned about your future.
I am concerned.
But I can't remember if we... Nobody knows, right?
No.
We don't remember. We probably did come up with a name, but we forgot. We do that a lot here. So let's just call it the last segment.
The last segment. Okay.
So go ahead.
So like the Last Supper.
You get to be...
Okay.
Well, you get to be Johnny Carson.
And this is a short version of it because we went very long in the last segment. But I want to start a discussion that I guarantee will continue between now and like next April.
Okay.
And I was listening to you with the call-in folks today. A lot of Blue Jay talk on the call-in folks. And we both agree that we are not... This is not a pennant race. It's kind of a phony pennant race, barring something miraculous. So they're not going to win. They're not going to be in the postseason this year. And the fan base is agitated, and they're looking for someone to blame. And they're saying, should we fire the manager? Should they fire the general manager? Is it those cheap bastards at Rogers that have caused this to happen? Who do we blame? Is it Colby Rasmus, who doesn't care about baseball? You know, there's all kind. I've heard a million different things out in the air. Where would you start, Bob? And if you're addressing that person that calls you and says, what went wrong? What went wrong between May and now? Because we didn't start out the season thinking necessarily this was a playoff team, but it looked like it for a while.
You can't dismiss injuries, but that's too much of an excuse. People will say that's an excuse. That's not a reason. And there's some validity to that. Not unexpectedly, the bullpen wasn't as good as it was last year. The starting rotation, however, if you look at statistically, it was better than it was last year. Players that didn't perform. Colby Rasmus didn't perform up to the level of expectation. Brett Laurie's hurt all year, and you needed something specifically from him. Reyes's batting average looks pretty good, but he fell through on clutch hits more than a few times, and he showed his defensive... He was exposed defensively. We spent too much of the Blue Jays spent too much of this year. I was going to say we spent too much of the year watching AAA players play for the Toronto Blue Jays.
In certain positions especially, yes.
And the flaw in this team, which existed, but we hoped wouldn't be exposed, was this organization right now has insufficient depth. Players 20 through 30 aren't good enough.
Position players.
And pitchers.
Okay.
Whoever you cite in your chart of value, you know, your last five, and there may be one or two pitchers in there. But
half your starting rotations, you know, younger than that, right? Or in that within that age group in their early 20s. You've got Hutchison and you got Stroman, both in the starting rotation. They've both been good.
Yeah. But your organization didn't have the depth. It didn't have a guy to come in at really and play for Laurie in a year when he only played 70 games. It didn't have a guy to go and play center field when Rasmus was out. I mean, Ghost was out there a little bit, did an okay job. There wasn't a guy ready for that position. And that happened over and over. I think that was as much as anything. I find what's really intriguing is next year now, all of a sudden. Because it isn't about what you have to do. It's that you all of a sudden have this option, this possibility of taking the Oakland A's route and saying, Norris, Nolan, Stroman, Sanchez, Hutchison. We could make that the five-man rotation. You and I don't expect that to happen. But you could do that. Five guys under the age of, 24 in your starting rotation. And guys who have a big, high ceiling. I'm going to be interested in our conversations over the next few months in trying to dissect, would you do it? Can you do it? And if you do it, how does that impact on the other guys you keep who are in their 30s, who may not be as valuable when these guys are ready to perform? A lot of interesting questions. Our thanks to Masai Ujiri, Bob Ryan, for joining us this past hour. For Brunt McCowan, have a nice evening. Probably see you tomorrow.